Hi, everybody.
Welcome, welcome. Hi, Makita.
Hi, Joanna. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, brilliant. I'll wait like another half a minute to get
started. Yeah, that's fine. Also, as a heads up, it's about to start storming where I am. So if I drop off the call, I have a plan B for that. I just wanted to give that heads up, because I have no idea how that's going to work.
All right. Hopefully it'll work out. You're still in Rochester, right?
I am in Rochester. My grandmother's house, evidenced by the curio cabinet that I think is just a universal grandmother's house sign. So
good. Okay. I'm going to wait like just a couple more moments.
Yes, you can wait.
I want to make the most of our time, but like start with as many people as possible. All right, I think we should go ahead and get started and let people come in. As they come in, welcome everyone. I am so, so happy to see all of you. I'm so happy to be here together today for this very, very important topic of looking at ways that we can be as equitable as possible and make our spaces that we facilitate and hold as safe as we possibly can for people of color. And this is a topic that has been a priority of mine for a number of years now. 2018 is the first year that Makita did a special training for the community. And I bring it up because it feels important to say this. Whether you have done training before or not, what I have come to really see and believe is that one training isn't enough. That it is because there's so many, and I know we'll get all into this, but just from my point of view, I want to say, like, because there's so much messaging that has just been seeped into us and the ways that we look at the world, to continue to undo the messaging and how we approach and how we hold, we need to keep on coming back and doing the work and doing the work and doing the work. So whether you have had training before or not, I'm so glad that you're here. I am here with you as a student. I will be taking notes today. I know some new notes and also notes that I've written down before that I need to write down again and bring in and embody and integrate more deeply. We are so lucky that we get to have Makita with us. In a moment, I'm gonna read her official bio, but I just to speak personally, I have known Makita for a very long time, and she is one of the most, first of all, the most masterful coaches and practitioners that I know. And one of the many reasons why I love for Makita in particular to lead the Sacred Depths community through this training is that she speaks our language. And she's able to, like, very uniquely for coaches and for coaches who are committed to being trauma-informed, to being ethical, and to going deep, she can bring this topic alive, I think, in a way that nobody else can. So I'm going to go ahead and read your official bio. Makita Penny Cook is a teacher, facilitator, and certified life coach and change strategist With over two decades of experience in leadership and personal development, her genius is holding space as people navigate change, specifically the space between what was and what is not yet. Change is hard, and it is in that in-between where most people get stuck, overwhelmed, or retreat back to what is familiar, even if it is something they no longer desire. Makita supports people as they move through the messy middle so they can achieve what it is they truly want. Her ability to hold space for the in-between has proved beneficial for white leaders who want to step into the work of unlearning and seeing with new eyes on their way to becoming anti-racist. Makita is convinced that until all of us are free, none of us are free, and will gladly walk with anyone who is committed to the freedom of all. And I'll post in the chat Makita's contact info. Makita, thank you so much for being here. I'm gonna be quiet now and put myself on mute and let you take the show.
All right. Thanks, Joanna. And thank you to everyone. Just a quick check-in to make sure that everyone can hear me okay. Yes. Awesome. And there's several folks who don't have your video on. And if it is all possible, I would love to have your video on just so I can see your faces. I like to know that I'm interacting with actual real people, but I also know life happens sometimes and it's hard sometimes to put the videos on. But if you could, there'll be no judgment about, you know, if you're in your pajamas, please, by all means, be in your pajamas. If you're still eating breakfast or you're having lunch, that's okay too. I would just love to see everyone's faces. A couple of housekeeping things and a few invitations before we dive into the content. First, I really do encourage you to have pen and paper. I encourage you to take notes. There will be a couple of times when I'll invite you to jot down your perspectives and shares. And so really encourage you to have pen and paper. I also want to ask, if you have questions, please feel free to ask them along the way. I would also say that if you don't have to wait till the end, there will be time at the end as well. I'm hopeful there will be, but please ask your questions along the way. I am not a talking head. This will not be I'm just going to give you a bunch of information and then send you on your way. I really want this to be an interactive, us both, you know, talking back and forth with each other. So please ask your questions as you go along. You can unmute yourself to ask your question. You could use the raise the hand feature if you'd like. I feel like we're all Zoom savvy enough to know what I mean by that. And you're also welcome to pop it into the chat. I'll do my best to keep an eye on the chat. Joanna, I might ask for your help with that, though, in case I might miss something. But I want to hear your voices, and I don't want you to be shy to ask. And a couple of things I'm going to invite you to really be mindful of on our call today, one of which is something that I have seen. I've been doing this work for a long time now, and one of the things that can get in the way of people really being able to embrace this information is the good-bad binary, this binary that says I'm either good or I'm bad. And so as you hear things today, you might find yourself feeling like, oh, I feel like that's making me feel like a bad person, or shame might show up. Shame often shows up in trainings like this. And I'm really going to invite us to stay away from the good, bad binary, remembering that we are all made up of light and shadow, that none of us are all good or all bad. And if shame shows up, it can, in fact, interrupt your willingness or your ability to be present here. So I just want you to stay present to that idea, because whiteness as a construct is going to be called out on this call, and you may get uncomfortable. And I'm going to just ask you to notice that discomfort. We're going to talk about discomfort in more detail in just a little bit, but I just want to name that right at the very beginning so that when it shows up, you have some tools and you know what to do to lean into that space rather than avoiding it or running away from it. We are going to be looking at ways that you can minimize harm in your practices that you might have. So whether that be coaching or yoga practice or whatever it is, that whatever your container might be, your unique space that you're curating, we're gonna look at the ways in which you can minimize harm in those spaces. And if you're going to create an inclusive space for people of color, so Black, Indigenous, people of color, then I want you to think about not just about the one-on-one sessions that you might have, but anywhere where you might curate spaces. So whether that be your social media platform, a retreat that you might hold, a group coaching program that you might do, wherever you might gather people together, what we're going to talk about today is applicable in those spaces. And so as you listen today, I don't want you just to think about your one-on-one sessions, but really wherever you might gather folks. And as Joanna just said, I am not likely to say anything that you have not heard before in some context, right? And so maybe some of what you'll hear will be brand new. Maybe some of it will be stuff in likelihood you've heard somewhere, particularly if you've been doing this work or you've done some kind of training before. Here's what I know, and here's what research shows. We need to hear things a minimum of 7 times before it really drops in and for us to really make long-term changes. We might make some short-term changes, but if we're really going to make long-term changes, then ultimately that's what we're after. At least that's what my hope is, that we're after is making long-term changes. Then we need to hear the same thing over and over again for it to really drop down and become embodied, right? So because it can be in our head, right? And we can have lots of head knowledge about what we quote unquote should do, but for it to really become embodied, there's practices and work that has to be done. And part of that is that we have to hear it multiple times. So even as I'm speaking, if you are like, oh, I've heard that before, I'm going to encourage you to stay present and not check out for that conversation, because that this conversation might be the piece or the layer that you need to get it to drop that 6 inches from your head down into your heart to become embodied. Okay. And I have 90 minutes. I don't have a lot of time. So there's no way we're going to get into a lot of detail. This is going to be very much an overview. And for anyone who at the end of this call would have a desire to go deeper, then I'll talk through what that could look like at the end of this call. 2 more things, and then we're going to dive in. The first is please, 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 please stay away from judgment. No judgment of yourself and no judgment of others. Judgment interrupts learning. It also interrupts truth. And if we cannot access truth, then we cannot access transformation. And Joanna and any space that she holds is ultimately about transformation. And if judgment is present, then we cannot get to the truth that's ultimately going to lead to that transformation. So no judgment. And instead of judgment, I'm going to encourage you to welcome curiosity. Stay curious, be open to seeing what might show up, or what you might need to hear, or what might need to shift for you personally. And remember that we're all learning, we're all growing, and this is a no judgment free zone, okay? So if everyone can be in agreement with that, I would love to see some thumbs up. So I know we're all here and we're raring to go. Okay, all right, excellent. All right, so since I just said I'm not a talking head, I would love to hear from you guys. What was your reaction to the video with Michelle Johnson that I asked you to watch as the pre-work? What was your reaction to that? What stood out to you from that video? I should also tell y'all that I'm real, real comfortable with silence, real comfortable. So I'm willing to let y'all just stay here. So what came up? Who'd like to go first? Victoria. Come on, Victoria. Thank you, Victoria.
Hi. Hey. I figured I just would jump in.
I appreciate it.
I also just want to name, I'm nervous. I don't know. I'm nervous. I'm going to say the wrong thing.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd just start with that.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Victoria.
So there was a lot that stood out for me as I listened to Michelle's TED Talk. One of the things that I kept spending time with and circling back to, I wrote it down, which will help me in this moment, which is we live in a toxic culture that conditions us not to see the toxicity. And I'm like, we live in a toxic culture that conditions us not to see the toxicity, to like drink, she's like something, this is off memory, but to drink the water and not like know,
yeah,
or maybe even question what it's made of.
Yeah. That's good, Victoria. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Deep breaths like that. Thank you. Maria, no worries, Maria. Don't worry about it. We'll chat about it in just a little bit. So you're good. I will, it was an email, pre-work email that was sent out. So I can send it again at the end of our time together. And so you can see it. Jennifer, did you have a question? I think I saw your hand.
I would share too. Can you hear me okay?
I can. I would love for you to share.
Thank you. Yeah, that really struck me as well in the video, and the our liberation is inextricably bound, and which feels it feels kind of freeing and also overwhelming, like where to start, or like that swimming in the water and not seeing the water that I'm swimming in, and oh my gosh, like I know some small ways I can make a difference, but also, you know, what are big ways, and to not get overwhelmed so that work can be done.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you, Jennifer. It is overwhelming, right? It is the water that we're swimming in, the air that we're breathing. Yeah, so thank you so much for that. Who else? Who else would like to share? I'd love to hear from one more person. Don't be shy. Amy G, because I'm going to bet there's more than one Amy on this call. Amy, go.
Hi, thanks, Makeda. What was really striking for me, so I resonated a lot. I'm also a yoga practitioner and a teacher, and sharing that work. So the resonance that I could connect with when she started to go into the breath and I sunk into this incredible universality was what was coming up for me, and kind of the oneness that was being expressed through her that was so grounding and so beautiful. And what was really really striking for me was then how that layered out into, so what else is going on here? And when she brought in that kind of, I'm very visual, so these four walls, being inside here with my practice in this oneness and raising incredible awareness of everything else that's going on outside that we're all connected to, or that I'm all connected to. And that was really, really powerful for me. And seeing it in that lens that I had never considered before as well, I was like, wow. Thank you for that deep learning. So
it's brilliant. Thanks, Amy. Thanks so much. You know, I really love that video, and I love that it's the reason I said it as a pre-work is several things. Jennifer, the idea of this universality of like our liberation is tied, right? My liberation is tied to your liberation, is tied to the liberation of our planet as a whole. We are all connected to each other, right? And if I am oppressed as a Black woman living in the United States of America, then that oppression translates to everyone else, right? And I think that Michelle did a really beautiful job of helping us to think about that idea. And then coming to the breath, right? Coming back to the breath and the ways in which the breath can ground us and really invite us to stay present in the moment that we're in. So Victoria, you talked about your nervousness, and that's okay, right? It's okay to be nervous. It's okay to think you might say the wrong thing. And I am such a big advocate for saying what you want to say. And then if you need to learn and unpack, and then we'll talk about that piece and what that can look like throughout our time together. Discomfort can and very well might show up for you. And when it does, I'm going to invite you to come back to your breath, to use the tools that you have, the most simple of which is your breath work. And Joanna has equipped y'all with a whole slew of things, and you all have your own individual practices that can ground you. But staying present to this conversation, because you will be tempted to check out, to escape the discomfort by thinking about the grocery list or thinking about the next thing that you have to do after our 90 minutes together, or you'll start looking at this other thing that might be going on. Bruce, I love how outside you are. I'm such a big fan of the outdoors, and it's raining where I am, so no outdoors for me today. But you could get distracted by the birds and all the things that might be happening around you, right? So the invitation, as we are really getting started and we're diving in, is to come back and stay present here because we really and truly need to be in this moment and in our bodies to really allow for, again, the transformation. I have no interest in just head knowledge. If you want head knowledge, you can get that anywhere, right? There is a slew of resources out there. What I'm interested in is in being embodied as you create transformation around this topic of anti-racism and racial equity, and being able to stay present and to lean into the discomfort rather than running from the discomfort is an essential skill to develop. It is absolutely necessary if you're going to make long-term changes. And Joanna can speak to this in her own personal experiences of the ways in which over the years, since 2018, when I first did this talk, and previous to that, the ways in which the discomfort has come. And the clients who I work with one-on-one, every layer that we drop down further into, right, there's more discomfort that has to come. So I just want to say that the discomfort that you might be feeling, the nervousness that you might be feeling, the discomfort that's surely to come up as we continue our conversation, all of that, I'm going to encourage you to lean into it so that you can learn from it. Because that, again, is where the real power lives. So lean into that discomfort. Try not to run from it. Come back to the breath. And just remember, my commitment is a recognition that our liberation is tied to one another, that we are not separate from each other, but we are all one. That is part of my work and part of what I believe to be true and why I'm so deeply committed to doing this work and supporting white people who truly want to do this work. I'm supporting them in that work because I'm so committed to that process. Okay, so we good? So why don't everyone take a nice deep breath in? Let's take a good big inhale together. Yes, and exhale. Excellent. And just drop into that exhalation. All right. Okay, so we can't have any conversation around minimizing harm when you are serving Black or Indigenous or other people of color without discussing the concept of power and your relationship to power. So let me start first. And the first question that I want you to jot down, and then we'll have a conversation is about, is what is your understanding of power? How do you define the concept of power? Give you about a minute or maybe 30 seconds or so just to write down that idea. And then I'd love to hear from a couple of you. Okay, so talk to me. What's your understanding of power? How do you define it?
I think power is the potential to affect circumstances and or other people.
Okay, yeah, great. The ability to affect circumstances or other people. Yeah, thank you. Who else? Thank you, Maria. Who else?
It's Marla.
Marla, I am so sorry. Thank you for that correction.
No worries. Thank you.
I'll go. All I Thank could come you. Up with was, I felt very, just limited in my words, but the freedom to exert influence is where I landed.
The freedom to exert influence. I like that one. I like it. Anyone else want to add to that? Caitlin.
I was struck by how hard it was to be neutral in the definition.
Because it's just like, it's so easy to be corrupted. It's wielded so unfairly so often. So even as I wrote it, I was like, it's an energy that can be wielded fairly or unfairly, which still puts it in a binary, but it was hard to just like neutralize it. So I was glad to get two neutral ones, but I was still like struggling.
Yeah, Marla and Danielle actually did a really good job of giving us the neutral definition of power, which it really is boils down to the ability to direct or influence your own or another person's behavior or course of events. All right, so it's the ability to direct or influence your own or another person's behavior or their course of events. John, I wrote privilege and strength over someone, using force or dominance to achieve an outcome regardless of what the others want. Don, that's a good definition. And what that does, what you've written down, is an example of the ways in which power can be used in ways that are harmful. Because in and of itself, power is neither bad nor good, right? So Caitlin, to your point, it is ultimately how it gets wielded that determines if it's a good or bad, right? So, and I really try to stay away from the use of the word good or bad because there's judgment attached to that. And really what it boils down to is how it gets wielded, right? And we can use power. We all want to embrace our own power, right? So that's not a bad thing. But then we can take our power to use what Dawn said and use that over someone else. And actually, you know, we can use our power for good or we can use it to oppress, harm, or hurt others. Power, we can think of power in three ways. Power over, which is what Dawn has written. Dawn, you have given us a very excellent definition of power over, the ways in which we take our power and we pop somebody over the head with it. You can think of power as power with. Laura, I see your hand, give me 1 second. We can think of it as power with, right? So it's more of a collaborative approach of working with someone. Or we can think of power as power within, right? Which is encouraging us to cultivate the power that we have within ourselves, accessing that inner resilience and our inner capacity for creating change. So it's power over, power with, or power within. Those are really the three ways that we can think about power. Before I go, keep going, Laura, tell me, do you have a question or a comment you'd like to add?
Kind of a question. You mentioned not to look at things as good or bad. And then just now you said you can use your power for good.
Yeah.
So what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, so when I said it, I was like, it's less of being able to use it for good or bad. What I mean is, are we using our power, particularly as coaches, are we using our power with another to help them cultivate their power within? And ultimately, when we think about how we utilize or how we wield power, are we using it in a way that's going to create an outcome that's the most positive for everyone involved? Or are we using our power in a way that really, to bring in Dawn's word, is about what we want regardless of what others might want? Is that helpful?
Yeah, that clear. Yeah, I like you putting it into those categories instead of good or bad.
Good or bad, yes.
Or even something else you said was, yeah, I mean, it comes down to really what people desire. Like you might say something's good and I think it's bad. So
exactly.
You really can never use those words.
Right.
It's just, I either desire this or, you know, I desire something different. So that really helps.
And nuance is important here, right? And perspective is important here, right? So it is about how we wield that power, right? Are we using it to hurt or oppress? Or are we using it to help other people access their own resilience and create the kinds of change that they can affect? Because the systems that are in place, right? In her video, Michelle said white supremacy is an ideology and a system of beliefs. Right. And in the United States of America, the belief system that we hold in this country is an ideology that says whiteness has supremacy above all else. Right. And what whiteness wants, whiteness gets to have. That's what this country's ideology is built on. Laura.
Can I say one more thing? So, yeah, because let's say a white person or anyone with power could say, well, I'm doing this good thing for you because I've decided it's good and it might be good. But the question is, does this person that you have power over actually want you to do this thing, whether it's good or bad? Right. Are they collaborating? Yeah, like you said, are they collaborating? Is it with or is it over?
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you. So let's think about that inside of the coaching relationship, there are several types of power that can exist in a coaching relationship. So you might have positional power. So if you are someone who runs a coaching practice alongside other coaches, right? So you, Joanna is a good example of somebody who has positional power inside of the Applied Depths Institute. She has a group of coaches who support her in her work. She has positional power inside of that organization, right? And so whatever your container looks like, positional power might be something that you hold. Inside of your coaching containers, you might also hold expert power because there are multiple types of power. Expert power is when you have knowledge that others don't have and you're sharing that knowledge with others, right? And so Amy talked about her coaching her yoga practice. And if Amy, I don't know, but if you teach others about yoga, you instruct others in yoga, then you have expert power for those who are coming to yoga who know nothing about yoga, right? Or who don't know, understand how to coordinate the breath with the movement. So you do have some expert power, right? And in the context of this conversation that we're having today around minimizing harm, if you are a white or a white passing practitioner, there's a power structure in the dominant culture of whiteness, which I just alluded to, right? There is a culture to whiteness, right? The white middle-class dominant culture is a thing in this country that was first identified. Anti-racist educators, Kenneth Johnson and Tamara Kuhn, they many years ago identified 15 characteristics to the culture of whiteness. And what the dominant middle-class culture of whiteness says is that white is at the top of the hierarchy and everyone else is below whiteness. Marler, to answer your question of what I mean by white passing, is that I think of my friend Elizabeth, who is Puerto Rican and Italian. But if you looked at my friend Elizabeth and you listened to her talk, you would not know that she was Puerto Rican because she is very, very light skinned. She looks white if you're just looking at her and talking with her because the Italian side of her family is what had the greatest influence in her upbringing, not her Puerto Rican side. She is a woman of color, but you would not know it by looking at her. Is that helpful, Marla?
It is. I mean, I know kind of what that meant in the past, but does it mean she's like pretending or just denying that part, or she just appears?
No. She just appears white.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, yes, okay. So this hierarchy of whiteness is very present in the United States, and I know not everyone is in the US, and I would argue that anywhere that colonialism has touched, then this hierarchy of whiteness is present. And the thing about power is those people who have power don't ever really think about it. And those of us who don't have it are always thinking about it, right? Because if you have the power, you don't have to think about it, right? As a parent, for those of you who have children, if you as a parent, you have a measure of power over your children's lives, because as you should when they're little, they need your guidance. You don't often think about that until they become teenagers when they start pushing back against you on all the things, right? Caitlin, you asked, it can also mean she benefits from it. Yes, Caitlin, you are correct. Bruce, I see your hand. Give me 1 second, and then I will answer your question. So these characteristics about the culture of whiteness, Kenneth and Tema identified 15 characteristics, things like either or thinking. There's only one right way to do it, a right to comfort, and there are several more. They identified all of these characteristics to whiteness, and I can share the original document with you post to this call so you can get a sense of what I'm referring to. That original document identifies these characteristics inside of an organization, so inside of most corporate settings. And then I later took that document and modified it to think about the ways in which it shows up in our lives in general. And when I work with my one-on-one clients, we go through that document to unpack how each of those characteristics are showing up in their lives and how they need to shift that in order to really show up in just and equitable ways. I'm bringing it up here because power hoarding is one of those characteristics where I hoard my power and I do not want to give that power up for any reason in any shape or any form. right? And this dynamic, this idea that white is over every other person, is something that has to be managed inside of coaching containers. Okay. Bruce, what's your question? I'll pause before I keep going.
Yeah, hi, Makita. Thank you. Something gets stuck in my craw, I'd like to, it's in my stomach, and I'm like, I can't focus until I talk about it.
No worries.
You mentioned three, you know, aspects of power, power over, power with, power within. But I was also thinking about this idea of powerlessness and power under.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's a form of less power, powerlessness. It's it's some kind of power that is less than. That I just had to throw it out there because it was kind of sticking with me.
Yeah, no worries. So what I hear is that for you, there's probably another layer within this conversation of when you have less power and the ways in which you can, that powerlessness can be felt with you or whoever might have less power. Did I get that correct? Yes. And that is an accurate state thing that, so if I think about, good Lord, if you look at America now, but let's go back to America and slavery in the days of slavery, right? Where Black bodies did not have a lot of power. We were powerless, right? So that is a fact. And inside of the way that that structure was set up and in the ways where power has, there's a lot of power over happening, we look for ways to access the power that we do have, that inner resilience, the ways that we can not so much rebel, but really take control where we can take control in order to hold on to our power. Because those who are exerting power over us wants us to believe that we have no power and exist inside of that. And because there is a measure of we are divine creatures, however you understand the word divine or universe or whatever, this is not about a religious idea, more about the idea that we've got power inside of us. And that power always wants to rise to the surface to find expression in some way. And so, Bruce, you are correct. Those who are exerting power over wants us to feel like we have no power, and we get to make some choices even in that space, if that's making sense.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Okay, Rosa said, all of us who are white or white passing benefit from it, whether we want to or not. Yes, Rosa, you are absolutely correct. All right, so let's talk about the ways in which this dynamic, so there is a dynamic at work. When you are working with a Black, Indigenous person of color, a BIPOC person, a non-white person, there is a dynamic automatically at work inside of that relationship or inside of that container because of the culture that we exist in that has named whiteness at the top and everybody else at the bottom. So that power dynamic has to be managed inside of those relationships and inside of those containers. You have got to level the playing field of power in those containers. Joanna talks a lot about leveling the playing field. And I'm going to talk about specifically how do you level that playing field inside of your relationships or your containers, your coaching relationships or containers with people of color. And again, I'm a Black woman living in America. And so I'm going to speak from my experience as a Black woman. I'm going to invite you to think about how, use the law of adaptation, which Joanna talks a lot about again, use that law of adaptation to think about how my experience as a Black woman applies to any non-white person that you might engage with, okay? So there are five things that you can do to level the playing field of power inside of your relationships or your containers rather with people of color. The first is to recognize that that dynamic is there. You gotta recognize that it's there and take responsibility for the fact that it's there and not try to run from it, but to acknowledge it within yourself. Just not about acknowledging it out loud to anyone else, but within yourself, recognizing that it's there. Because if you can acknowledge that it's there, then you will be more intentional to make sure you don't fall into habits or patterns that will lead you to exerting power over without recognizing that you're doing it. So acknowledge that it's there. Part of that acknowledgement is also recognizing that you may not be fully trusted. Now, this is hard for white women to hear from me as a Black woman, that we don't automatically trust when we come into your spaces. We have made a conscious choice to come into your space, but want you to know that you are not automatically trusted. It is hard for me to walk into predominantly white spaces and feel safe. And here's the thing, it's not about the person who's holding the container. I love Joanna to death. She's one of my favorite people in the world. I could sing her praises all day long. And when I show up in her spaces, I don't always show up safe because it's not about Joanna. It's about what she represents. It's about what the women around represents, right? It is this idea of whiteness and the ways in which whiteness is not safe for me, right? And so what I really encourage you to do is to really be mindful that that's there and not try to prove that you're not like other white people. Right? Because the minute you try to prove that you're not like other white people, you just prove that you're like other white people, right? So don't try to prove that you're not like other white people. Just show up as you. If you make a mistake, acknowledge it, right? And in showing up consistently as you, you will earn our trust, right? And so just know that it's there, but know that you're not responsible for that. We will take care of it on our own, okay? Jennifer asks, is this worldwide or are we specifically speaking to this US? Jennifer, my answer to your question is, if there is anywhere, wherever in the world where colonialism had happened, where someone went in and said, I'm taking this land away, and I'm going to whether enslave those people, kill those people, get rid of those people, any place where that has happened, I would argue it is an issue. So in England, I know that that's an issue in England because I have lots of friends in England. In Australia, I know that that's an issue because I have lots of friends in Australia. On the continent of Africa, in the various countries in Africa, this is an issue. So anywhere where colonialism has touched, I would argue that what I'm speaking to is a truth. Okay, Jennifer, I think your video is off. So yes, okay. Awesome. Got that. All right. So first, you're going to acknowledge it and recognize that you may not be trusted, and that's okay. It will come. Okay. The second is, and look, a couple of these you already know. So remember, no matter how much you know, you do not have the lived experience of your client. You do not have the lived experience of a person of color, of a Black person. And questioning their lived experience is dangerous. Now, this one came on this list because in working with one-on-one coaches, right, when you use phrases, excuse me, when you're speaking to someone and they have shared, if you're speaking to a Black person and they're sharing with you an interaction that they've had with a white person, and you say any version of, yeah, but, which can sound like, have you thought about their perspective? Have you considered that maybe they really meant? And these examples are coming from a client who I worked with, who was working with one of her clients, who was a woman of, who was a Black woman, and she witnessed her client shutting down. And when she engaged with me and she was talking with me through that experience, and she told me what she had said, I just talked her through why those words actually were harmful and was responsible for that woman shutting down. Because what she did in that moment was she made the white person's perspective and experience more important than her client's experience and what her client was experiencing. She centered whiteness in that moment. She didn't realize she was doing it, but it explains why the Black woman shut down. Now, if she was talking to a white woman, it might not have made a difference, but she was talking to a Black woman whose lived experience around whiteness. Remember, whiteness in the culture that we live in this client was living in America. In a predominantly wealthy community on top of that, right? In this country, we are constantly being told that white is better than Black, always. And that the voice of white people matter more than our voices and our experiences. So my client, in saying to her client, did you consider this person's perspective? Maybe this is what they meant. In that space, it was not helpful, right? And it caused harm, which caused her client to shut down. Does that make sense? The lived experience of your clients of color, you do not have it. You cannot have it. No matter how, even if you hold another marginalized identity. So if you are a part of what some of my friends call the alphabet mafia, the LGBTQI community, I heard them referred to, several of them have called it the alphabet mafia, and I love it. And those few friends have given me permission. So if you are a member of that community and you don't like that phrase, I apologize. But if you hold that identity as well, right? So you may hold a marginalized identity. Maybe you're neurodivergent, right? That whatever, if you hold an alternate identity, that is different than the experience of a person of color in this country or any country where whiteness is dominant, okay? Third thing, you are not the smartest person in the room. Again, I know that you know this. That is not earth-shattering information, especially since all of you are going through sacred depths, right? The client always knows what's best for them, right? Lara spoke about this earlier, right? I might think it's right, you might think it doesn't work, right? The client always knows best. Here's why I put this here. Because again, in talking to my one-on-one clients who are working on racial equity and anti-racism work, consistently the ones who are coaches have noticed that they drop into telling far more frequently with their clients of color than they do with their white clients. And I'm talking, this is not one person. This is more than one person to whom this has been proven true. And this is not just with Black people. This is with Asian clients that they have. This is with Hispanic clients that they have, right? So I'm not pulling this out of nowhere. I'm pulling this from my actual coaching clients' experiences where they have seen that, and they don't realize that they're doing it. They don't realize that they're doing it until we start talking. And then when they start reflecting, they have all confessed to me, you know what? What's interesting is I start telling my clients of color way more frequently than I start telling my white clients. So you want to level the playing field? Remember, you're not the smartest person in the room. And be mindful if you're dropping into telling. You know this. You don't want to drop into telling, but really be mindful if you're frequently doing it with clients of color. The fourth one is to stay curious. I love curiosity. I think curiosity is really important. Curiosity, not just about like, tell me all about your experience of being a Black woman in this country, but curiosity of recognizing, that there are experiences that I have that shape how I show up in the world. And your curiosity as a clinician is to be open to hearing how your clients of color's experience inform the choices that they make, inform why they make the choices that they make, where they choose to go, how they choose to behave, right? Not in a place of judgment, but in a place of curiosity, because it will expand your own level of learning. We have to make so many adjustments to live in this world, dealing with microaggressions, having to code switch. Code switch means like I sound what, excuse me, I currently am in Rochester, New York, relocating my mother, and several of my family members are here, which is why my sister and I decided to relocate her here. I am Jamaican. When I am not with my family, I don't sound Jamaican. And people will often say, where are you from? And because I don't sound Jamaican. I have sounded more Jamaican in the 3 weeks that I have been here because I'm around my people, right? And we just drop into it. And I tell people, I sound like a Jamaican when I'm around my family or when I get angry. So if I'm not around my family, then you don't want to hear me sound Jamaican because that means I'm angry, right? That's a little bit of what code switching is, right? I can't talk Jamaican to y'all because y'all wouldn't understand me. But if my family were here, I would easily talk that way with them. Does that make sense what I'm saying? So code switching is something that Black people do because we know it's what we need to do in order to be heard and understood in white spaces. But all of those things take a toll on us, right? And so it does inform how we choose to show up, to stay curious. And then the final one is to be aware of expressions of white saviorism. And again, Laura helped us think about this one because white saviorism comes in and says, I know what's best for you. So let me do for you or tell you what you should do because I know what's best. So I'll say them again. The first one is to be aware that the dynamic is there. The second is to remember you do not have the lived experience of your clients of color. The third is to remember that you are not the smartest person in the room and to be mindful of dropping into telling versus coaching. The fourth is to stay curious. And then the fifth is to be alert for white saviorism. That's how you're going to level this playing field of power in your coaching containers with people of color. All right, I have done a lot of talking as evidenced by the fact that I need water. So I'm going to pause and I would love to hear from a few of you what's coming up as you consider this idea of there being a power dynamic in white and non-white relationships. What's coming up? Yes, Mark.
I mean, it's very enlightening. I'm sad about it. I mean, these subtleties, I understand how powerful. And that's it, I guess.
Thank you, Marlo. Thank you for sharing. Who else? Victoria, did you? Victoria, and then Jennifer, and then Catherine. That's the order in which I saw the hands.
I'm thinking about how troubling it is to think that you might have the best intentions, but may also be perpetuating or minimizing something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Victoria. Jennifer.
I think it's very similar to what Victoria just said. I don't even know exactly how to articulate it, but thinking really about what struck me really is about taking the responsibility mm-hmm. really deeply. I mean, I was thinking about times where I've co-led a workshop. I was co-leading a workshop. And my co-leader deferred something to me, or we changed the timing because we want just being aware and making sure there's equal space for everyone, and mm-hmm. and that I think
thanks, Jennifer. Catherine.
Hey, thank you so much for doing this. Can I, my Wi-Fi is a little funky. Can you hear me?
I can.
I mean, it's so painful thinking about these things, and like, I've been really sensitive to it my whole life. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to be kind of talking about it. And I think a couple of the things that stick out is, I guess one of the things is it's interesting to take like the family dynamic I grew up in and sort of that role that I have and how like being curious was punished and like my role sort of was the savior. I was a very parentified child. And so it's like, I mean, it's painful. I'm aware of when I'm doing it just to anybody. And I'm like, shut your fucking mouth. And it comes out anyway. And like, I extra mindful about it. Like, it's just a big thing. You know, and Victoria said like not wanting to be misunderstood, which is and having good intentions, which is also this like childhood thing that I'm trying to like deal with, or not trying to deal with, like, it's resolving over time with some effort and awareness and all of that. Mm-hmm. But also one thing, like, it's really, especially in the past, like 5 years or so, become apparent to me, like how much I don't want to talk about race. Cause I don't want to sound like I know everything, but like my best friend who we've been best friends since we were, you know, in high school is Asian. My last business partner 5 years is Asian. And like, I don't talk about race. And I think the challenge is like how to ask questions. And it's really scary for me to ask questions and not to just be declarative or silent, which are sort of the roles that I've had. So I guess like, and I always, and I never want to say like, what's okay, because then there's that whole, like, it's not my job to tell you what's okay. Google exists, like go away. But then also like, the internet's not the answer for a person, you know? So it's so tangled. And I really appreciate like having this space, you know, cause I also, one thing, and I'll stop talking cause I can just blather forever, is I do feel like there's this, it's such a fear to be called a racist as a white person. And there's this piece of me, like, could everybody just say out loud, like, I have racist thoughts. Like, you can't live in America and not have them, you know, but it's like, it's such a, like, it's a third rail, whatever it is that you say it. So I just feel like the opportunity to kind of acknowledge like sort of biases or like whatever it is that we have in this space that feels safe. I just think it's so helpful.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So. Thank you, Catherine. I really appreciate you saying that. And I appreciate what has been shared so far. Bruce, I think I want to grab your question. And then I think before I dive into why coaching us, another layer of why coaching people of color is so different, I want to talk about how to apologize really well when you mess up, because you will. And I want to share about that. Bruce, let me grab your question first or your comment first.
Yeah, thank you. So what struck me was the second one, and you know, no matter how much I learn or try to learn, or you know, about the way to be, right? That I will never be able to embody what that feels like. No matter how much empathy I have, I'll never be able to embody that.
Yeah.
As much as I try, you know. it just is not going to happen. So that really kind of struck me when you said that, and also the first one too, just, you know, that's always going to be there for a person of color, you know, indigenous, that's always going to be there. And just to try to get that idea of that. The second thing I wanted to say or question I have is, and you may not have time to answer this here, but working with somebody as a coach that is explicitly racist, I have one of those in that I'm working with that actually just came back to be coached some more. And how do, I mean, I'm not going to change him. I can only coach him. I can only get curious about what's going on. I know there's a lot of trauma there, blah, blah. You know, I can go into all that. My hesitancy is always like to call him out on it. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's a space that it's like, I've got to let it be, you know, it's difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. I don't have time to talk about how to handle something like that. Cause in my work, I do talk about the difference between calling someone out versus calling them in. And there is a difference. There is a way to do both of those things. Don't have time to do this. I'm pretty sure I do a second part training for Sacred Depth. I don't know how the classes get organized, but I think you guys will get invited to that. In that training, we talk about unconscious bias. We talk about what do you do when you are faced with some of that. And we look a little bit at that calling out versus calling in space. So when you get the email about that, by all means, come on back for part two. And what I would say for Tao to just hold this for you right now, Bruce, is the acknowledgement that it's there. And for you, as you deepen your own learnings and as you embody your own desire around being an anti-racist, is thinking about how that aligns for you as a practitioner in sort of being with someone and coaching someone along those lines, and what those boundaries need to look like for you to be able to stay in integrity with yourself as you work with that person. I think that might be the best thing that I could say for right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. So let's talk really quickly about how to apologize well, because here's the thing, guys. I don't know how, we need you. We need you. And when I said we, I mean, Black bodies, Black and brown bodies in this country need the voices of white people. Black and brown brownies, Black and brown bodies in every culture that is dominated by whiteness needs the voices of white people to be a part of this fight, because they those who hold power will never give up power just because they woke up one morning and said, hey, I think today I will give up power to these marginalized people. That's never going to happen, right? So we need people who are going to advocate, people who are going to use their voices to be allies and accomplices for us in this work. And your nervousness and your hesitancy will keep you from the work and keep you from the fight. And we need you in the fight. So when you mess up, it is not a question of if, it is when. And so first, my first invitation is to drop into the idea and the acknowledgement that you are going to mess up. You're going to step in it. You're going to say the wrong thing. You're going to do the wrong thing. It is going to happen. All right. So expect it and accept it. Both of those things. Okay. Now, when you do mess up, this is how you apologize well. Okay. Before I even get, and I evidently I love the number five because I'm about to give you five steps to apologize well. But even before we get to that, I want to say that there are two words that do not belong in any apology. The word if and the word but. Okay. If abdicates responsibility. I'm just giving up all the responsibility. If I offended you, well, if just says, eh, whatever, you know. And it also centers, it ignores that I actually did something, right? So we're going to take if out of it. And then we're also going to take the word but out of it, because the word but makes everything that came before it unimportant and everything that came after it more important. I know that I upset you, but that wasn't my intention. So I've just now made the fact that I upset you far less important than the fact that that's not wasn't my intention, right? So no if and no buts when you're apologizing, all right? Five steps to apologize well. First and foremost, you have to listen and regulate your need to defend yourself. You've got to manage that, especially in like when you mess up in race issues, in race conversations, in situations with Black or brown bodies. You've got to regulate and manage your instinct to respond or defend yourself. That's the first thing. The second thing is to center the impact or the harm that was done. You've got to center the impact, not your intentions. You can have good intentions and still cause incredible harm. Your apology has to center the harm that was done. Number three is to take responsibility for your actions. You got to take responsibility. Acknowledge you did the thing. It's not enough to say, I'm sorry that I caused that. What exactly did you cause? What exactly was the actions that you took that led to the outcome? That's taking responsibility. I'm sorry that that happened. What did you do that caused that thing to happen? Right? Take responsibility. If there's a way for you to repair what needs to be repaired. And avoid any kind of, I'm such a terrible person. I don't know why people put up with me. Like, avoid all of that self-deprecation, because the self-deprecation, again, centers you and not the harm that was done. Okay? So repair, if repair needs to be done. And sometimes there's no repair to be had, and that's okay too. And this is the most important part, is to change your behavior afterwards. Your apology is the first step. It is not the last step. It is the first step. And you will be watched to see what you will do different going forward. So change your behavior. If you did or said something, don't say or do that thing again. If you can at all avoid it, right? Change your behavior. That's how you apologize well. And let me say this, that is how you build trust with Black people, with this Black person, right? When you apologize well and you try to change your behavior, right? When you acknowledge that you've messed up, that's how you build trust with us, because we can see that you're trying. We don't expect you to get it right. We have no expectation that you will get it right. I hold no expectation that you will get it right. So don't expect it of yourself. And instead, stay kind to yourself, apologize well, and then adjust afterwards. Okay. Any questions about apologizing and how to do that well? Okay. I'm noticing the time. So let me talk a little bit about, in a little bit more in depth, about why coaching Black or Indigenous people of color is different. And it is different than coaching a white person. So the power dynamics that we've been, oh, Caitlin, you have a question. Thank you. I will pause before I keep going.
Caitlin, yeah, go. Sorry.
It just apologize.
Quick comment, which I think when you were talking about apologizing, I was thinking about times in the past with people that I may not interact with again. And I was thinking about, like, how do I deal with that? And I think the number five of changing your behavior afterward is how I, you know, I can't maybe address that direct person, but just like thinking about the behavior going forward. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, that's good. I'm glad you pointed that out. And I'm glad you made the statement, because it's important to recognize that sometimes the harm is so egregious that someone might choose, you may not interact with them again, or they may choose to not want to interact with you again, right? And you've got to really recognize that that can be okay. And you can still choose to change your behavior. Because changing the behavior really is about you wanting to be in the world as a better human. Oh, thank you, Joanna. Joanna got the list. It's in the chat. All right, thanks. Anyone else? I don't want to rush if anyone else has a question or a comment around apologizing. And if you do, unmute yourself, because I can't keep track of where everyone is at the moment. Or use the raise your hand feature. Thanks, Caitlin. Okay, so let's talk about coaching Black people. All right, so the power dynamic. We're managing that dynamic all the time. The bias that does not give us the benefit of the doubt anywhere that we go. All you have to do is watch any video that gets posted on social media that involves a Black and a white person, and you can tell that Black people just are not given the benefit of the doubt, right? Or people of color in general, but again, I'm a Black woman, so I'm gonna speak to the Black experience. That is something that we have to navigate every single day of our lives. We cannot opt out of engaging with whiteness or white people because of the world that we live in. Now, we can minimize how much we have to, but we can opt out completely. White people, on the other hand, can structure their lives in such a way that they never interact with Black people or people of color who are not in a service capacity. So a waiter, a waitress, a cleaning person who cuts their lawn, right? People, when I do anti-racism trainings, people often ask me, they don't ask me as much anymore, but they used to always ask me, how do I make more Black friends? And I had somebody once call me, she sent me an email, and then she called me, because she had an older woman who she knew, who she was friends with, who really wanted to have a Black friend. And she really, my friend is a connector, and so Wu is number one in her strengths finder. So she called to see if I would be willing to be this woman's Black friend. No, I'm not going to be her Black friend. No. Now, if she loves musical theater, we can connect around the fact that I am obsessed with musical theater, but I'm not just going to be her friend because I'm Black, right? I said to people when they asked me that question, you're asking me the wrong question. My question to you is, how is your life structured that you have no interactions with Black people in ways that will allow you to make friends with Black people? White people can structure their lives to never engage with Black people. I cannot structure my life to never engage with whiteness. I'm always going to have to deal with white people, and I'm always going to have to engage with people who on some level think they are better than me. They may not do it consciously, and many of them don't, but subconsciously, lots of them think that, even if they don't realize it. And that's part of the reason why we create spaces that are just for us, right? That are just for Black people. And I forget which platform I was on, probably TikTok, because I spend way too much time on TikTok. But somebody was complaining, it was TikTok, because they had created a Black book talk. So book talk is a thing on TikTok. And then Black creators on TikTok who love books wanted to create Black book talk, which was focused on Black writers and Black characters. And people lost their ever-loving mind about why we had to do that and what was wrong and wasn't that racist and blah, blah, blah. We do that because we need spaces where we can just be, where we don't have to armor up against whatever thing that some white person is going to bring it to us, especially good white people. Good white people are the most dangerous for me personally, because that has looked like someone reaching and touching my hair, which is very much out of control right now because it's humid here and my hair is going to do anything. She's going to get bigger. But people like touching my hair. And when I put it in braids, people will randomly come up to me, don't touch my hair. I'm a pet. I'm not your pet. Why are you touching my hair? It's the white woman who wanted to make sure I knew that she had seen the movie, The Green Book. It was the other woman who came up to me after she had been through one of my 10-week trainings. And it was in a religious setting. So these were not people that I necessarily knew personally, but she wanted to make sure I knew that she was noticing the colored people around her more. Yeah. People say those things to me all the time. It's exhausting, y'all. It's exhausting. So when we come to your space, whether it's a one-on-one session, a group practice, a group retreat, a yoga space, we come with all of that that we're bringing with us, right? That you all will have not have to deal with. White bodies don't have to deal with that in the ways that I will, right? And then another really big thing that Black bodies bring to any space that we come into is generational trauma. Now hear me. We all have generational trauma in some capacity, right? Catherine, I think it was you who just spoke about being parents, like you had to parent your parents, right, at an early age. So we all have some form of generational trauma. What I will say is that Black bodies have endured centuries of being systematically brutalized, abused, raped, objectified, and controlled. Generations, years, where we were told that we were not even human. We were 3/5 of human. We carry generations of unhealed trauma from our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, 16 times back to the time of slavery in this country. And again, I'm Jamaican, but the majority of slaves who left the west coast of Africa were dropped off in the Caribbean. So we carry the same generational trauma of slavery in my Jamaican blooded body that Americans carry. That trauma informs how we show up. It lives inside of our bodies, right? I was at the store here. I'd taken my mother to go get something and we were in a mall. This little Black boy was crying and his mother was not happy with him. And she just turned around and whacked him for crying because he had no reason to be crying as far as she was concerned. And I had to leave. I had to, because my first instinct was, okay, well, she's passing on her trauma, right? And then my second instinct was to grab the child and try to protect the child, but it's not my, you know, but my body felt that because I recognize that she's got unhealed trauma, which is why she's passing that trauma onto her child. That trauma lives inside of our bodies. And we are doing the work. Some of us are very much doing the work, but recognize that every time there is an incidence of racial violence that is publicized on the television, our bodies relive that trauma, right? I think about when I watched the insurrection in the US a couple of years ago now, my entire body tensed up when I was watching that, right? Our bodies remember, right? Our bodies have wisdom that we are not always aware of, right? So our bodies are remembering. And I want you guys to know that, because while we all carry some level of generational trauma, the kinds of trauma that Black or Indigenous bodies, let's talk about Indigenous folks and the trauma that they carry as well, that is unmatched by anything else. And that is on top of any other trauma that we might be dealing with as well, right? And so recognize that that is a thing. I think about myself. I used to be a part of a predominantly white organization. And every time I walked into that space, I armored up energetically, my armors went up. So it just got exhausting after a while, right? Because oftentimes I'm taught that white people are not safe. Just when I think they're going to be okay, they'll turn around and do something. And I'll be like, oh, okay. So not so much, right? So the generational trauma that we carry is a piece that I just want you all to acknowledge. And again, it's not your responsibility to make that trauma go away. I know Joanna structures sacred depth to make it a trauma informed space and to make sure that we understand that trauma is a thing. I want you all to recognize that the trauma is going to show up, and we're just asking that you witness it. Know that it's there, not diminish it, even and especially when you can't understand it. And also to remember that sometimes, I think about one of my clients who talked with me about, she'd been in a group coach, it wasn't a coaching thing. She was in a group space. She was not the facilitator, but something happened in the space that in the group when they were all together, and it involved a Black woman, and the head facilitator, the person who was facilitating the group, worked through the situation with everyone. And then my client was in a small group setting with the Black woman a little later on in the program. And my client was talking with me about how she just wanted to check in and make sure that that woman was okay and that she was fine. And on the surface, that sounds good, right? Like, she's caring, she's being empathetic. And as my client and I talked it through some more, what ultimately was behind her need to check in with that woman was she still felt uncomfortable and she wanted to feel better. And she couldn't feel better until she knew the Black woman felt better, which really wasn't about the Black woman. It was about her feeling better about, right? And so sometimes this need to make sure that we're okay is not about us being okay, but about you wanting to be comfortable. And what I will say to that is recognize that if I was in that space, or if that was me, my people have me, right? I'm gonna go out in the hallway, I'm gonna call a friend that I know, if I had to move a dead body, she'd be there. I'm gonna call her, I'm gonna call my sister, I'm gonna talk to my people, and my people will write me again so that I can come back into the space, right? It's actually harmful for people to keep coming. What's wrong? Are you okay? Are you sure you're okay? Is there anything else I can? That actually just keeps the trauma or the harm at the top, and then I can't actually self-regulate. Am I making sense? Yeah. Okay. So when you are coaching people who are people of color or Black or Indigenous, I really want you to know that the biggest thing that is the most helpful thing you can do is to just remember, we bring things into this space that you cannot be aware of, you can't know, and that does inform how we show up. But the most helpful thing you can do is to show up, be present, do the thing that you're skilled to do, that we're paying you to do that thing. And then if something happens in your container and we get harmed in some way, get the resources, reach out to the places where you can to try to right that wrong in whatever way that you can, because it is different than it would be in if you were treating a non-white person or working with a non-white person. Okay, once again, I feel like I've done too much talking, so I'm going to pause. What questions are coming up for you guys? Anything you need me to clarify or unpack a little bit more from what I just said? I am noticing our time, so we'll be wrapping up shortly, but what questions are coming up? Catherine. And then Jennifer.
Yeah, I was wondering if you have thoughts on sort of words, like how to express sort of your presence. Cause I think it's really important to like not try and clean people up when they're messy. You know, like every time someone cries, like giving them a tissue, like make mm-hmm. it go away, put it down, you know, like, mm-hmm. And also I think sometimes the initial, like to give space is sort of too much. Like, do you have ideas or sort of words or way of being present of saying like, I'm here, like mm-hmm. acknowledging my, you know, like I'm making myself available or I'm present. And, but mm-hmm. I'm also, it's without expectations mm-hmm. or needs for you to take, to expel more energy to make mm-hmm. me feel. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So I will speak from my experience. What's often helpful for me is to hear someone say, I see and hear how difficult and hard this is for you. I can feel that. And I know it's not exactly the same. And not but, and I want you to know that I hear and see how hard this is for you. And if you want to say more, you can. And if not, that's okay too. I'm just here. it's enough to acknowledge that you've seen and heard my pain and that you're here. And I'm likely to not talk to you, right? And it's still nice to know that you hear and see. It feels like it's not a lot, and it's not, and yet it's still the most I feel like it was be helpful for me personally.
No, I like the sort of, I think the less words is more.
Less is better. Less is better. Yeah. Because what happens when you start talking is you keep talking, and then you start trying to make yourself better. And then it just gets messier even after that. So less is always more. Yeah. Great question. Thanks, Catherine. Jennifer.
I think I had pretty much the same question. And just in thinking about it and listening, just recognizing my own discomfort of anyone having an issue or feeling uncomfortable in a group and me wanting to fix or make it better. And perhaps I just need to investigate that more in myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That discomfort is an important thing. And if you are the lead person and someone says or does something in your group that harms someone else, you immediately need to take that. You got to acknowledge that right away. Don't let that go unsaid or unspoken. You've got to step in and speak to that, right? And if appropriate, you'll ask the person, if someone says something in your group, I don't see why we can't all just get along. I don't see why race needs to be, whatever this phrase might be, that can be the dismissive phrase. You have to call that out as the head, as the facilitator. You've got to call that out in that moment. And even if you're messy while you're saying it, you've got to do something because the people of color in the room are watching you in that moment. Yeah. What other questions do you guys have? Danielle, and then Bruce.
Hi, so
there you are.
I'm in a group that is quite amazing, and I've been in it for several years. And just this past week, something very big happened that resulted in an amazing Black woman resigning her role within the group because of the way that the leader addressed certain topics. Mm-hmm. And the topics were spiritual in nature, and she doesn't usually go there in her work. And so it's so interesting to me because I think with coaching, like when you were talking about the power over, power with, power within, the power within was what she was speaking to. And this is a person who actually is very much about, like, first of all, any work she does, she's talking about oppressive systemic stuff and getting all that out there. Because of the container, she thought she could put some stuff out there, some spiritual axioms. And she even said, and we're going to go into the realities of patriarchy and all this terrible stuff next week or whatever. It wasn't next week, but she thought she could separate it. And that was very harmful for certain people in the group because what she was speaking about was almost like a radical acceptance of all of life and this, like, everything is divine. And again, this isn't what she normally speaks on, but she was going there in this group. And so what my question is, my thought reflection is, thinking back to that power within and thinking within coaching containers, even specifically, this was a community, but there's such a desire for us to continually on our own self-awareness, go deeper into like, oh, what is my power within this situation? And it was such a jarring and very, I mean, everyone's kind of grieving in their own way. And thankfully no one's centering their own white experience. Like they're just, I see a respect and of what's happening, but there was a real fallout. And I think it was around that. I think it was around this well-meaning spiritual advice about like, you have such deep power within, and this is just try this on for size. Like everything is divine. And the other one was about no bad trip. Basically us taking the invitation to say anything that is happening in my life, I can So you can see how this could go terribly wrong.
Yeah.
And this is even with a person in my life that is, in terms of white women, like the one that goes beyond the rest I know in addressing oppressive stuff straight up, first of all. So with her even doing this, and like you said, there's going to be mistakes. She did it. It happened. And she's apologizing. And I clearly very well, and I don't know the behind the scenes, but owning it, not centering herself. So I guess, yeah, any thoughts on that? I mean, I'm not in spiritual work, but it seemed like it was in that you know, little nuanced space of taking ownership for our own lives and doing that as a white woman in a space with people of color could get very.
It's nuanced, right? And sometimes those axioms and those statements that can just get made hold no space for the nuance and holds no space for the ways in which systems stand in the way of people always being able to reframe something or change something or overcome something. Like, those things have to be taken into account as well when using statements like that. And it's always a both and. You have power, and there are systems that might keep you from being able to always access that in ways that can feel empowering. And so that kind of a statement is too big of a statement to make in a group setting like that. It really probably needed to have some nuance attached to it. But yeah, you always have to remember the nuance piece. Thanks, Danielle. Bruce, your question.
Thank you for all of this. This was really great. So what impacted me is when you said, on top of all that, and what I was thinking about is underneath all that, right? We normalize this. I remember watching your other video that you did on the pyramid, the normalization to genocide. And it was really impactful when you said that, because I never really thought of it that way. Like, there's all this other trauma, but underneath this is also this normalization of this centuries of intergenerational trauma that we don't think about. So that was just really impactful for me to just imagine that and think about it. Because I think about intergenerational trauma and the work I do all the time. But on that level, I mean, we normalize that. And then there's all this trauma that's stacked on top of it, right? Yeah. Like the little boy in the grocery store.
Yeah.
You know? So I just wanted to comment on that. Thank you for saying that.
Thank you. I know we're almost at time, and I know I sort of like bummed all of you out, but let me say this. First of all, as a Black woman, I'm grateful. I think there are 20 people in the room, something like that. I'm grateful that you all have shown up and come to this space. And again, I want to say that I've shared my experience as a Black woman, and I think in many ways, while it will look different for other people of color, again, I think in many ways, the experiences are... go across the board, right? And just want you all to think about how you're showing up and recognizing, again, we need your voices. We need your platforms and your impact, and we need you, right? So I'm so grateful that Joanna is doing this and drawing this awareness. And because, you know, I had 90 minutes, and Danielle, you talked about sort of the nuances of it, right? And how we can't dig into the nuance in a group setting that happens best in one-on-one spaces. And so I just want to extend an invitation to anyone who would like to go deeper. I do one-on-one work. I do have space in my schedule right now because a client just transitioned for additional one-on-one anti-racist coaches clients who want to do this work and look at the nuances, to dig into some of these characteristics and the way that they might show up. Where my genius lies in the anti-racism work is not just the education piece, but the analysis and the integration piece. Like analyzing your behaviors, your impulses, your biases, the instincts that you have, and then how do you integrate the new information that you're getting? That's my lane as an anti-racist educator. I just put in the chat the link if you want to set up a call with me. I will say that I'm not available through Memorial Day, which is Monday, but after Monday, I will be, even if my calendar says I am, because sometimes my calendar wants to imagine I have availability that I don't actually have. But I would love to just chat with anyone who would like to go deeper, who would like to look at the nuance. My client, I have one woman who's been working with me now for 3 years as an anti-racist one-on-one client. And as we have gone deeper, she's seen new things. And so being able to really look at your own personal life in a way that you can't in this setting has been and continues and witness this transformation happen. And so I just want to extend that invitation. I have been super grateful to all of the questions and the comments that have come forward and the openness of everyone who's on this call. And are there any other questions for anyone before I hand this back over to Joanna? I really appreciate you guys being so open and hearing me out today. So thank you. And keep showing up in whatever ways you can. Victoria, and then Marla.
I was just going to say thank you, like just from the bottom of my heart, and to everyone here, and Makita and Joanna, and just thank you for this space.
Thank you. Thank you. Marla, thank you, Victoria.
The same. I just, you know, thank you.
Welcome. You're welcome. Jennifer, thank you. You're welcome. Imbal, Caitlin, thank you guys. Joanna, I will turn it back over to you. Thank you guys so much again for having me today.
I also just thank you so much, Makita. I'll end the way I started. And I feel so lucky. I feel lucky to know you personally, but I feel lucky for all of us to be able to have this time and space with you. Thank you for all that you bring. And I highly recommend anyone who wants to go deeper into these issues to get in touch with Makita and have a conversation and talk about the possibilities.
Yes, please. You're welcome, Dawn. Thank you guys again. And I hope you have a good rest of your Wednesday.
Bye. Thank you, Makita. Bye. Thanks.